Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. Hello, and welcome. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm sticking to what I said and getting another episode out before the end of February. Maybe that won't sound so great when I tell you that this episode was actually recorded in August 2021. But I hope I will redeem myself once again by letting you know that it's with my number one library love, senior collections librarian Rhianne Isaac. Anyone who knows me, especially through the world of work slash libraries, will know that myself and Rhianne have been a bit of a double act at times, so it was only natural that I'd invite her onto the podcast. Rhianne is a qualified archive and records management professional. She's overseen the special collections for Leeds Libraries for the past 7 years. She's also a wonderful human who I've had so much fun with over our 9-year friendship. The start of this episode is us like crapping on about how we met and laughing at ourselves. So if that's not what you came for, then do skip ahead a few minutes, but hopefully you'll indulge us a little bit and you can hear about how I almost killed Rhianne in the first days of meeting her. We have lots of chat about special collections in this episode, and I have to point out one thing, because since our chat last August, it's plagued Rhianne that neither of us could remember the first name of the very famous Yorkshire cartographer of the 1579 Saxton Atlas, whose name was Christopher. And I'd like to openly apologise for putting Rhianne on the spot, and to assure her she doesn't have to remember absolutely everything. Anyway, without further ado, this episode is actually about the infamous, notorious, truly dastardly highwayman Dick Turpin and his ultimate link to Yorkshire. I'll be back at the end with information on where to find resources for the episode as usual, so do go forth and enjoy No Heathen Land, episode 6. Hello, Rhianne, and welcome to No Heathen Land.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
That's okay. So I was really excited about having you on the podcast because Rhianne is like my best library friend.
Hooray.
Yay. So as I've been starting with everyone else, how do you remember that we met?
Well, quite exciting. I think the first time I met you, I think it was when I interviewed you for a job.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And you came in, and all I can remember is we asked you to do a presentation using a flip chart.
It was a flip chart.
And you came in, and every single part of this flip chart paper was full of scribbles and ideas. And it was just like a snapshot of your brain. It was great. I can't remember what the question was.
I can't either. I didn't remember it was like a flip chart. Oh, maybe I do remember it's a flip chart. Were we given it like
before
half an hour before or something?
I think you just downloaded your brain in a chaotic but wonderful manner.
Oh, that's a nice way of describing me. Wonderful and chaotic. And then, so Rhianne was my
manager for like a year and a half or something. So that was like the first job after being a library assistant. So like a first librarian job, proper librarian job, I guess. And I was the librarian for social media and community engagement.
Very techie and cool.
Yeah, which was a brand new job at the time, wasn't it? It was when the libraries were trying to bring themselves up to date by having a proper like social media presence, and it was tricky. We were just discussing this before I started recording that it was a tricky time trying to get like the balance of being cool and then also adhering to like working for a council and a library service that were a little bit behind.
Very risk averse, aren't we?
Very risk averse. But yeah, I think it was nice because we became friends pretty quickly, didn't we? And there is a huge reason for that. It's because I tried to kill Rihanna.
I thought you were going to talk about the really embarrassing thing when I said that I really liked your custard-coloured hair.
You said, no, that's not what you said.
This is like the number one thing as a manager you do not say to your new employee.
So Rianne said that my hair looked like yummy custard. Like, thank you. Luckily, I love that. So me, my yummy custard hair and Rianne were, I think it was in the first week of the job, wasn't it? We were going to...
So you're still trying to impress and...
Well, I thought I'd already impressed with the flip chart, so obviously I'd just given up. But we were going to... So we did a lot of community work, so we did like quite a bit of outreach, didn't we? Like driving around and going to lots of different places in Leeds. And we were going to a community group in Bramley. And I was probably using my sat nav, would have thought. Mm-hmm. I'd only been driving about a year and a half, I think, at that point. And like, I think I'm quite a confident driver, but maybe I'm just a bit, I think I'm just a bit daft, like, overall.
You were confidently wrong on this occasion.
Yeah, and we were driving, like, towards a dual carriageway. And as we were driving, I realised that we were driving, like, on the wrong side of the road, and it was one way, and it was onto a dual carriageway. Can't even remember how we got out of that situation.
You had to reverse. Oh my god! Back out.
I don't know if it's like, yeah, that was really scary. And then, sort of since then, it's made a special bond.
Yeah.
nearly died together in the first week of the job. And what else bonds you in that way? The near death, and then just going to talk to a lot of really old people in a library about something really, probably really mundane. I can't remember what it was. Yeah, that's how we met.
In our previous lives.
And then we worked together for years after that, didn't we? So we've always done loads of really fun, great stuff together, and like working with you has always been super fun. We've always got to do like really fun stuff. So we've done loads of big British Library projects together, mm-hmm. haven't we, in the library?
Our Harry Potter exhibition was our favourite.
Nothing will ever top doing Harry Potter and the History of Magic exhibition in 2017.
And Sally's very creative, and she made assorting hats.
I did.
Which I think is probably the pinnacle of your creative talents.
I think it is. I never consider myself like artistic in that way. But obviously,
the hundreds and thousands of letters.
Yeah, so I made a sorting hat. I don't even know, I can't remember how I made it. It must have been papier-mâché.
I think it was papier-mâché. It was very Blue Peter-esque.
It was, and then it had a micro bit in it that would give you your Harry Potter house. I didn't do that, but Rachel did that bit. Our friend Rachel, who is actually a creative genius, we're just piggybacking on the back of her. She's got the artists.
We've got the mad ideas.
We've got the mad ideas. She can execute them. So yeah. And then we also had like a hanging, like, I can't even describe what it was. It was like a hanging thing. It was huge in the atrium of Central Library, which, if you've not been, is a big, impressive space, isn't it? It was from an art group that had an exhibition and they left it. And so I was like, oh no, we'll do. We'll tie loads of letters to it, you know, like in Harry Potter when they all fly out of the chimney. And so I just took it upon myself to just hand make them.
And stain them with tea.
And then I used plasticine as a...
I'm not sure this is shown as the most professional light on reflection.
Right, okay. So as part of this, if anyone's interested, I will send pictures because it looked amazing in the end.
We definitely need some pictures to go alongside this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll have pictures to go with Rianne's story, and we'll also have pictures of this so I can prove my artistic prowess. But yeah, that's kind of like the pinnacle of working together, isn't it? And it was just such a fun, delirious time at work. It was great. And then, because I left the library service a little while ago, but we've stayed friends, which has been great. We've had lots of fun times together.
Yeah.
So what do you want to share what you do now? And so, I mean, one of the reasons why I chose you to be on the podcast is because you have a job that is very specific to sort of like this kind of theme, I guess.
So I look after our special collections at Central Library. So those are all the rare books, manuscripts, and just all the kind of really nice, cool things that we have.
I think it's the coolest job in library service.
It also involves a lot of moving dusty boxes. So there's a very unglam side of it.
Yeah.
But lots of really nice bits as well.
So in your job, what do you think is the... What's your favourite thing that you've come across in special collections? Is that putting you on the spot?
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
You know, every week I've got a new favourite thing.
That's true.
And what was really difficult for this, actually, is that a lot of my things aren't local.
Yeah.
So this was kind of quite difficult. So my favourite things... Oh, well, I love pirates. So we've got an amazing book from 1725, which is like the source book for all pirate history.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever branch out to non-Yorkshire stories... come do that.
Yes.
And we've also got just lots of really cool things and like lots of really nice natural history and botanical books.
Yeah.
And those are kind of really nice things to
share. I think I'll definitely come back to you at some point and do some other local thing. Like there's so much cool stuff in library special collections, especially the Leeds one, that people just don't know that it's there, and I guess that's part of your job to try and promote that and get it out to people. I think you do a great job.
And I think what we do that's a bit different is that we do try and bring them out to people.
Mm.
And people are always shocked. Like, I did an event in Chapel Allison and I didn't quite realise how young the kids were, but I bought some books that were like 300 years old. But they loved it, and they loved like touching the paper. And I think that's what I like the most. It's like feel and the look of books.
Yeah.
And yeah, and there's so much that you can come and see.
When I worked in the library, we'd sometimes, I'd do a lot of heritage tours of the building because it's like 137-year-old building or something. 135, 137, it's nearly 140 anyway. And we'd often take school kids round and we'd get out like one special collection item. It was usually that, there's like a book on writing, what's it called?
Yeah,
and it just looks really cool. It's just papier, it's made out of papier-mâché, isn't it? But that's from the 1800s and it just looks like a magic spell book.
It looks really gothic-y, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's black and it's got like red writing in it. If I can find a picture, I'll post that as part of this. So we'd use that, and then I'd say, so this is like primary school age children. So and I'd always say, what do you think might be the oldest book in the library? And then someone would say, 10,000 years old. But then someone else would say, 1935. I'm like, okay. So it's like either end of the spectrum. And that's what they do when they think of like, when you ask them how old a building is as well, they'll say like, it's a million years old or it's 40 years old. It makes you feel ancient.
Yeah.
And the teachers are just like rolling their eyes. But yeah, they'd always be really fascinated by like the age of books. Because even I don't have like a concept of that book is, like the oldest book is about 500 years old that's in the Central Library. How did it even come to us? I don't know.
The thing is, like, boy, you know, but books that are that old, because of how they were made and how the paper was made, or if it was on vellum, it's just made to last so much longer compared to a book that was produced in the 19th century that just is falling to bits.
Yeah.
So some of them are in just such good condition. And because they haven't had lots of use, sometimes you are like the first person for like years and years to open something.
There's something that does spring to mind in like a Yorkshire vein is the Saxton's Atlas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what year was Saxton's Atlas?
Testing me. 1570 something.
I think that's right. It's 1579. Something like that.
Yeah, and I think that some of the plates were made at different times.
So Saxton's Atlas is an atlas that was produced by John Saxton. What was his name? Mr. Saxton. We'll fact check that.
William Saxton. What was his name?
We went to the plaque revealing, didn't we? Did you come with me? We went to a blue plaque revealing.
You might have to edit this bit, absolutely.
No, keep it in. Me and Helen went to the plaque unveiling because it was in like Tingley Morley area. And anyway, he was from Leeds, wasn't he? And he was a cartographer.
And it was the first kind of atlas of its kind.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, so the counties of England and Wales. And it's beautiful. And what's really good is that the Yorkshire page is like a double plate.
It's like a pull-out, isn't it?
Yeah. And it has lots of the same names of Leeds that we see now.
Mm-hmm. Leeds.
Leeds.
L-E-D-E-S.
And Crystal instead of Kirkstall Abbey.
Yeah, love it. Okay, so moving on from that, I think that's quite enough information that no one signed up for. So, Rhianne, what are you going to tell us about today?
So, I am going to talk about the notorious highwayman, Dick Turpin.
Yes.
And this is because there's lots of information in the library, and this is just one of those stories that I really like. Mainly because most people have an idea Dick Turpin in their head, this like swashbuckling kind of anti-hero Robin Hood type person, and actually none of that is true. So the whole thing about him riding his horse Black Bess from York to London overnight, is all rubbish really. And that's all comes from a book that was published about 100 years later by, let me check, Harrison Ainsworth.
Oh, Harrison.
And so his book's called Rookwood. And that's where you get this kind of romantic figure, Dick Turpin. And that story's repeated through like ballads and penny dreadfuls. And it just becomes part of our like collective imagination. So that's just what you think of when you think of Dick Turpin.
So just for anyone that doesn't know, what is a penny dreadful? Because it's got the coolest name, but I don't think people know what they are.
So, penny dreadfuls were a real sensational printed. And they weren't even books, they were more like pamphlet type things. And they were to appeal to like a new reading market. So maybe kind of more working class readers. So like Sweeney Todd is probably the most famous penny dreadful.
Yeah.
And they would just be kind of really cheaply printed. And so not a lot of them survive, which is a shame. They'd just be passed around in like pubs and things. But you get some really crazy, sensational, and they loved criminals and those kind of stories.
Okay, so please continue with your story.
So yeah, so why I'm interested is that I really like trying to find out the kind of true stories behind things, which Sally knows, and I'm just always like trying to like fact check, and I'm really annoying that when I'm watching anything on TV, I'm always on like Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Is this true? Who are the people?
Obviously, I have to do that.
But obviously, working in the library, you've got other sources you can use.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, one of my favourites is the London Gazette. So we've got a whole run of these in Central Library dating back to 1665. And it's the longest running newspaper. And it's a shame because to look at it, it doesn't look like much.
No, it doesn't. it's just amazing.
It's amazing. It's just literally like lots of pages of writing, and they're all kind of bound and kind of library binding. But it covers history, you know, 350 years, all like big events that have happened, from the Great Fire of London to the French Revolution, all the way up to the present day. But what we also see are these adverts to capture criminals of the day. And so after the Civil War, we start seeing all these outlaws, so all the people who kind of lost the Civil War. So you get these people who have guns, who are outlaws, and they turn to highway robbery just to, you know, make a bit of money. So that's when we start seeing the word highwayman. So we get lots of appeals to try and capture them, and these really like detailed descriptions of what they look like. So I always think of it as like an early Crime Stoppers.
Yeah.
Have you seen this person? And like all these details. And also any highwaymen that give up any of their accomplices, they get immunity as well, which is quite a good deal. But you can see that, you know, they took it really seriously. People were really scared of them at the time. So they were really trying to crack down. But yes, so this doesn't start as a Yorkshire story, but I promise it will.
That's okay, don't worry.
So Turpin is famously part of the Essex Gang, and so we first see an appeal for his capture in 1734 for poaching deer, and this was actually a capital offence, as lots of offences were at that time. And then he turned to highway robbery. So he just starts off as like a common thief, really. But we really start to see his true colours, and he's just like a really brutal, horrible person.
Mm-hmm.
Really not kind of the glam highwayman that we think of. So Turpin and his gang tended to target isolated farmhouses. And they weren't always rich people. You know, it wasn't like a Robin Hood type thing that he was like robbing the rich to feed the poor type.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would terrorise and torture his victims until they gave up their valuables.
That's so scary. Like, that's like horror material, isn't it? Like a cottage on your own in the middle of nowhere, and then you get hijacked by a group of terrifying criminals.
With guns, violent criminals. And even like today, if you think about people breaking into your home, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
They really, really weren't nice people. And one particularly gruesome story, and it probably wasn't unusual at all, but he heard a rumour that an old widow had hidden £700 in a house, which would have been a lot of money. But the lady was not giving it up easily. So he held her over an open fire until she gave it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, especially with women victims, it wasn't like, oh, children and women won't hurt you.
Yeah.
It was literally just whatever they could to get money.
Did she die? Do we know?
I don't think she did die. Okay. I think she was just horribly tortured.
That's horrible. And lost all her
Money.
All
the
cash.
Yeah, all the cash. Probably under the floorboard somewhere. So in 1737, so this is a bit late, so we see a number of Gazette's editions containing adverts for the capture of Dick Turpin. And by now, Turpin was hiding out in Epping Forest. And this was after he'd shot someone, which we think was another highwayman, and maybe by accident.
Oh.
I know. It's a lot of these things that could, like, by accident and just things going wrong. But Turpin was spotted by a servant of the forest keepers, Thomas Morris, and he shot and killed him before he could be captured. And so we see that the reward now is £200, which is around £32,000.
Wow, that's a lot today's of money.
So do you want me to read out what the Gazette said?
Please.
So it's in ye olde language, so bear with me. Whereas it has been represented to the King that Richard Turpin did on Wednesday the 4th day of May last barbarously murder Thomas Morris, servant to Henry Thompson, one of the keepers of Epping Forest, and that the said Richard Turpin hath at divers times committed several notorious felonies and robberies in and near the said forest, and other places near the cities of London and Westminster. His Majesty, for the better discovering and bringing the said Richard Turpin to justice, it pleased to promise his most gracious pardon to any one of the accomplices of the said Richard Turpin. So that's letting everyone else go off free if they give him up.
Mm-hmm.
And as a further encouragement, His Majesty is pleased to promise a reward of £200 to any person or persons who shall discover the said criminal. So... lots of cash.
Yes.
And then the bit that I really like, it describes Turpin's appearance and a bit about him.
Yep.
So the said Richard Turpin was born at Thaxted in the County Essex, is about 30 years of age, by trade a butcher, about 5 feet 9 inches high, of a brown complexion, very much marked with the smallpox. His cheekbones broad, his face thinner towards the bottom, his visage short, pretty upright and broad about the shoulders. So this was like, keep a lookout for a guy like this.
That's quite a good description. It's quite detailed.
And there was never any kind of portraits or anything. This is just what we've got to go on. And so now we get to the Yorkshire side of the story.
Good.
Yeah, about time. So knowing that he can no longer hide out, down south, this description's everywhere, people are looking for him. He escapes to Yorkshire under the alias John Palmer. But does he turn over a new leaf? Start afresh? Give up his life of crime? What do you think?
Yes.
Sadly not. So he continues to finance his lifestyle by stealing horses and cattle and dabbling in the odd bit of highway robbery. And he probably could have carried on with this. And it was quite lucrative. Like, some people said that he lived like a gentleman. So he was making quite a bit of cash. But he came home. He had a bad day. Probably didn't rob as many things as he wished he had. and he shot his landlord's cockerel.
Oh, you don't want to shoot any cockerels.
No. And his landlord wasn't best pleased and kind of complained, and so Turpin threatened to kill him too.
Okay.
So, not good. So he was taken to York Castle dungeons.
Okay.
So at this time, a bit of detective work was taking place, and people were raising questions about where was John Palmer making his money, who was this mysterious John Palmer, and then all these kind of allegations of horse stealing came up. So things are looking pretty bad for Turpin.
Yeah, or Turpins.
Yeah, John Palmer, Turpin. So he wrote a letter to his brother-in-law asking for a character witness. Saying, you know, I need some backup for my upcoming court appearance. But it's a really strange turn of fate, really. So this letter never reaches his brother-in-law. We're not sure whether he didn't want to pay the postage or whether he saw the York post stamp and thought, that's going to be dick and I don't want to get involved in any of his dealings. So it stayed in the post office. And even weirder, his old, Dick Turpin's old kind of tutor, or we think he was like a maybe an older pupil that would help him with some of his studies or something like that, recognised his handwriting on the letter.
What?
I know.
What a weird quinky-dink.
I know. So, yeah, so he was a witness there, and he went up to York and he exposed him as Dick Turpin, and, you know, so his whole secret identity was exposed, and he was sentenced to death then.
He must have had some crazy handwriting.
I know.
Okay, cool.
But you just think all these little weird bits. So, yeah, so then execution time for old Dick Turpin. So, but he wanted to, you know, make the most of it and wanted to look his best. So he invested in a new frock coat, some brand new shoes.
Yeah.
And he also, day before his execution, appointed five men to be his mourners and gave them £3.10 to follow the cart, which would actually take him to the gallows. So he wanted it to be, you know, kind of a bit of a show, an occasion. And because he'd been, you know, such a wanted criminal, they had to spend quite a lot of money on security because they were really scared of like a breakout or an escape or something happening. So criminals were executed where York Racecourse is now. And York didn't have a permanent executioner at the time. So I think this is a bit creepy. So the custom was to pardon one of the criminals who had been sentenced to death on the condition that he acted as the executioner and killed the rest of the prisoners.
What?
I know.
I've never heard that before. Gruesome. So you would get pardoned if you would kill a load of other people in front of people?
Yeah.
That's mad. Would you do it? Well, you know when it comes out all those crimes you've done and you're finally arrested and taken to the gallows? That is like, that's mad.
But it must have been something that people really didn't want to do.
Yeah. Because you hear about executioners that were like notorious executioners, don't you? But I guess for most people it's not the greatest of jobs. Probably haunts you a bit.
Yeah.
Or a lot.
And what was even weirder is that the person who was pardoned was also a highwayman. So he was actually kind of killed by one of his own in the end. But he didn't, I mean, leading up to his execution, he kind of made the most of it. So he was a bit of a attraction in York dungeons and centre of public attention. And people just flocked to see him. And he had like loads of guests and loads of visitors. He apparently was even having like a bit of an affair as well.
This is not surprising. Like, I listen to a lot of true crime, watch a lot of true crime, and especially the big American serial killers all have women lining up to marry them, knowing that they've done all these awful things. Yeah. There's some kind of like,
well, he was
attraction to these people.
He was
kind
like a celebrity, so because he had been in all these newspaper adverts and and apparently the jailer made £100 just serving drinks to all the guests.
Can you imagine? I wonder what drink. They probably disgusting drinks as well at that time.
Probably. But yeah, so it sounds like they had like a little bit of a party in the lead up. But unfortunately, on the morning of Saturday, 7th of April, 1739, he was executed. And his corpse was left hanging on the gallows for until 3 in the afternoon, just to make sure he was properly dead.
Oh, I thought it was like so everyone could have a good nosy air.
Probably that as well.
Yeah.
But there were quite a lot of examples of people who were hung and then weren't actually fully dead. Which is...
Ugh.
And sometimes they just let them go.
Was it a public execution?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, a little tidbit for you. This podcast is called No Heathen Land because of an article that I read that was Charles Dickens writing to... Ooh, I'm going to forget what the newspaper was, but I will link the article. He wrote to a newspaper saying that he was going to go and see a public hanging because he wanted to observe the crowd at a public hanging, and he was appalled at the, like, the raucousness of the crowd, and he described the atmosphere as, like, in no heathen land should this kind of thing happen, which I just loved, that phrase. Yeah. But I just found it such a hypocritical letter that he's like...
He was actually there.
Yeah,
and then...
well, I was there, but it's fine if I'm there.
I'm doing my research.
Because I'm just watching all these other people that, you know, have got nothing better to do. But it's like a form of entertainment, isn't it? Like a weird morbid curiosity sort of thing.
Yeah, and also a bit of, I suppose, catharsis, isn't it? It's
like
getting rid of this element in society that isn't good or... Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird to think about it now, isn't it?
Yeah. Crazy.
But yeah, even weirder is that... So they buried him the next day in a really deep grave. But unfortunately, that didn't stop an attempt to steal his body. And in the 18th century, corpses for dissection were in such a huge demand, and the bodies of executed prisoners were a major source of supply, which is, made everyone feel a bit funny about. So this, from a pamphlet... We hear that, you know, people weren't too happy about this. Some persons were discovered moving off the body, which they had taken up, and the mob, having got sent where it was carried to, and supposing it was to be anatomised, went to a garden where it was deposited and brought away the body through the streets of the city in a sort of triumph, almost naked, being laid on a board covered with some straw, and carried on four men's shoulders and buried in the same grave, having filled the coffin with slaked lime. So the slaked lime was just to make it so you couldn't use it for medical purposes. So you can see that the general public really hated this idea of bodies being used for medical purposes and being dissected. And you see quite a lot of examples, especially around London, of riots and kind of protests about this. And in fact, the Murder Act of 1752 kind of really used this fear and disgust of dissection as a deterrent, because... Well, you know, you're a big fan of the 18th century.
it's my favourite century.
And it was just, you know, people were really worried about crime rates, especially violent crime and murder. So the acts made the sentencing and the execution of murderers really quick, so to stop kind of appeals and things. But also kind of more shocking, people were denied a proper burial, so their sentence included the terror of knowing their body was destined either for public dissection or being left to rot in chains for everyone to see.
Oh, that's grim.
So, and that was, you know, big acts, you know, proper legal thing. So actually, Dick Turpin was fairly lucky. He did get kind of a proper burial.
Yeah. Not very well deserved, though.
No.
He's not a very nice person.
And he did murder people.
He did, but...
That isn't what they got
him
on.
I still don't want
end.
Someone to, like, rot in public.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
But apparently, you can go see Dick Turpin's grave in York. It's really big.
Going on a day trip.
Apparently, Black Bess is buried there too. But you know, that's isn't quite true, that bit of the story. And also the inscription on the headstone's much later. I think it's not 18th century. So there's kind of a bit of a mystery about whether he is actually there or not. But you can go visit and have a look.
Definitely gonna go.
And then there's just one last thing I want to talk about.
I know it is, and it's the best.
So remember that description I read out from London Gazette, that really kind of detailed one. So in 2009, North Yorkshire Police used that description to create an e-fix.
What year was it?
2009.
Okay.
And so if you were ever in any doubts as to how, like, not handsome and Dick Turpin is, I mean, I can't even really describe it. All I can say is just Google Dick Turpin e-fix, and it really is as creepy as you might imagine.
I can see it.
I'm holding it up.
I will, there will be a link to that. I will find a link and put it in the show notes. But let me just have a closer look.
If you Google it, it's like every single newspaper picks up on it. Because I think it's just so weird.
It's like a Sim. It's like from The Sims.
But it's like what e-fits are like now. They're so odd, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to describe it is that you just have to go and have a look.
Well, let me compare it to the other picture of, like, the romantic version.
Yes, there's, like, a romanticised version of this. I think this is similar to the one that's... I mean, if you have a really quick search for Dick Turpin, this is, like, on the Wikipedia page, I think, of him. Gunslinging, jumping over a fence on Black Bess. The horse looks like it's going really fast. And there's people shocked that he's there, and he looks like he's got a good hairdo, hasn't he? And he's got a nice outfit on. He's got, like, chunky little legs. yeah, it's definitely different to this weird...
pockmarked.
Yeah. yeah, that is just fantastic.
But I think it just shows that there's this real kind of legacy, and this, like, the story of Dick Turpin isn't going to die, even if it's not quite the actual real history.
I think it's one of those people, isn't it, that's like, why him? Like, why was he the person?
Exactly.
It's just because he's got a disgusting name. don't you think, like, Turpin is like the worst?
Terps.
Like, Terps are or turnip. Yeah, that's what it makes me think of. So,
and I think it is really just that the book, you know, that got written, Rookwood. Because there were lots of highwaymen. I mean, he was a bit of a celebrity in his time, but so have a lot of characters.
Yeah, it's strange that it's, like, lasted.
Yeah, so many stories, and probably everyone would have heard about him. Maybe not the details of, like, him killing the cop call.
Yeah, you've got that. You can only come to this podcast for that information. I'll go and speak to Rhianne at least Central Library about it if you've got any. If you want to pick up on any of that. great. So I love that story. Thank you. I didn't know any of that. So you did send me your notes, but I just had a quick scan through, so it was all news to me as well. So at the end of the podcasts, I've just been talking to guests about something nice that they're enjoying, something that's occupying their time. We're still in, like, a weird limbo-y place, aren't we, really, where we're not going out very much still, even though we can, and I think it's nice to have, like, a distraction. Although, there is something that I do want to talk to Rhianne about that I did try and talk about with my second guest, Josh, and he hadn't watched it.
I couldn't believe this.
Yes. But I know that Rhianne has, and we've talked about it quite a bit. So, Rhianne, as she's mentioned earlier, is very interested in, I would say, the historical concept of, like, travel. So things like pirates and explorers.
Exploration.
So do you want to tell us about what you found in the explorers stuff?
So
this is very exciting.
So in Central Life, we've got lots of, like, exploration type things, and I'm always kind of on the lookout. Then one day I was just looking through our stacks, and there was, like, a photo album. And it just looked like a family photo album. But I opened it up, and it was actual photographs from the rescue of Captain Scott's expedition to the Antarctic.
Cool.
And it was really cool, and it was, like, really kind of, like, personal shots of them kind of looking out to sea. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of started off a bit of a obsession with me, kind of looking up. And the reason we've got it is that there's a Hull link, so it's kind of a Yorkshire Humber link there, but frustratingly, like, Sally, you'll know, sometimes we just don't know where things have come from.
Yeah.
So I've been in touch with lots of different places, and I'm going to go up to Dundee on a research trip. So that's where Scott's ship, the Discovery, is at the moment, and hopefully go through some archives and maybe try and find some links and some letters and things.
That's cool.
Going to be something I'm looking forward to when, I don't know, things are a bit more normal to travel about.
Yeah, that's just amazing. And, like, working in, like, a big Central Library or any kind of archive, like, I know sometimes people might think, oh, surely you know what's there, etc. But there's thousands of things mm-hmm. that, you know, you've only been in that post a fraction of the time that the library's been open in, like, the 130 mm-hmm. years. So there's bound to be things that are hidden away and might not have been looked after. So there's always going to be those things that pop up and are super exciting.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get donated things that are super exciting. Like, I always remember getting given a box that was full of Victorian funeral invitation cards. Oh, cool. So it was, like, for a specific funeral mm-hmm. for someone. I can't remember who the person was that funeral was for, but it was this, like, beautiful, really ornate, personalised funeral thing. And it was, like, little invite cards. Everything was, like, lined with, like, this black lacy, like, pattern.
Yeah.
Everything, like, gold and black writing. Like, these little cards, and there was, like, a order of service. And it was just, like, those little things that you just kind of get given, and you're like, where would this have gone if it hadn't come here? Yeah. Like, it would just be in someone's attic
especially
or something.
Those very personal things, aren't they? Those yeah. stories that you'd never find anywhere else.
It's also one of those things that's like, what do we do with it now? Yeah. And hopefully someone in a few years will find that again and just rediscover it mm-hmm. and hopefully maybe do a bit of something with it. I think that was 1901. I think it must have been a family thing that someone had found and just brought to us. So anyway, moving on from that, going on from explorers, what I wanted to talk to you about was the terror that was on the BBC. And now, when this finally does go out, it's going to be, like, really, really, really overdue, because it finished ages ago, doesn't it? But I only finished it a few weeks ago, and it was just great. And it goes along with Rhianne's love of Explorer.
I know, and I am a bit obsessed with the Franklin Expedition as well.
Yeah.
Just because it's just such a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they've only recently found the ships.
Yeah. So the premise of the terror is based on the Franklin Expedition.
Yeah, so Franklin, so it's the Terror and the Erebus were the two ships, and they set sail to try and find the fabled Northwest Passage. And this was, you know, up in the Arctic, and they were desperate, years, I mean, this was ongoing, trying to find this passage that would kind of open up trade routes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were really well prepared, the ships were really, you know, built to withstand the ice. They had supplies for years and years and years, but then the ships disappeared and they heard very little about it. So what's really cool about the Terror is that they try and fill that gap.
Yeah.
So what we don't know, so we do know, like, little snippets. So they did leave messages at different points, so, like, we know when Sir John Franklin died.
Yeah.
And also what was kind of really sad is that the Inuits, the native people, actually did try and communicate what happened, but at that time they just were completely ignored.
Yeah.
So actually their kind of oral stories have helped kind of fill the gaps.
It's a very, like, tense and I would say, like, harrowing series, but it's definitely, I couldn't stop watching it. I also got into it. No. It's so good.
And I think if you want to know what it was like, how bad it was on those kind of ships.
Like, there doesn't seem to be a good point for me. Like, why would you want to get on a ship?
Because I kind of, like, knew the history from all my Wikipedia. every episode was like, it's going to get worse. It's definitely going to get worse.
Well, yeah, because you were ahead of me. You finished way before me, because I kind of watched half of it and then dropped off for some reason. And then, yeah, I'd, like, text you every night and say, on this episode, and you're like, it gets worse.
You didn't tell me about, you know, the last bit.
Yes.
What did you think?
Well, as in the actual ending.
As in with the gold piercings in their faces.
Yeah. So there's just going to be spoilers. I'm just going to say this now.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think everyone knows that, like, it didn't end well.
It's also history.
Yeah, it's history, so you can find out about it before you watch. It's not like it's a new drama. So there was a bit where they found a load of the men, didn't they? In the middle of nowhere, I guess. It's the Arctic. It's just, there's just nothing there, and they'd been camping, and there was one of the men that was, had been pierced all over his face, and we were like, had a little discussion about the significance of it, and we don't really know what it was.
But that is based on an Inuit account.
Yeah.
Where they said that they saw men walking with gold in their face.
Yeah.
But when I first watched it, I went, they've taken it too far. this is just not believable. Yeah. It was actually based on mm-hmm. something that they'd heard.
Yeah, so if anyone's got any ideas about that, I'd love to hear more, because there must be some significance to it.
It really shook me up, that bit.
Yeah, that was bad.
that was even worse than the giant supernatural polar bear creature.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was worse than when they ate the man's, when he ate the man's bum.
Oh, no, I kind of saw that coming.
And I mean in, like, a cannibalistic way.
Oh, yeah. So. Cannibalism is a big part of the story.
Yeah. There was lots of themes running through it, because there was a homosexual relationship, wasn't there, mm-hmm. as well, running through a couple of the characters, and that didn't end very well, did it?
No.
I think it, one of the guys was trying to lead him on to get things out of him, get a gold ring.
Oh, it was all very dodgy.
Yeah. Well, this is like the worst explanation of a series that anyone's ever done. But yeah, that was, I really wanted to talk to you about it in person, because it was just so good in a, yeah, it was horrendous in a good way. It was very well
and I
done.
Just like, I mean, in a geeky way, things like Dickens appears, and that happened, yes. and that was real life. And also Lady Jane Franklin, which is John Franklin's wife,
yeah.
was actually the person that kind of really forced him and encouraged him to take on mm-hmm. the captaincy. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't really the right person for the job.
No.
But in a way, she's kind of one of the biggest characters, not in the show, but in probably yeah. the story. But she does pop up.
She does. And I think the way that she came across was interesting.
Yeah. And so she raised money, millions of pounds in today's money, to launch rescue ships to try and find them, and it went on for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they found out that, you know, they had resorted to cannibalism, she was so shocked that she recruited her mate Dickens to write something saying that this possibly could never have happened.
Yeah.
There's loads into it, and it's a really good kind of story to kind of research.
It is, and I really liked the sort of, like, I guess you could call it a supernatural element. Oh, we've got a cat.
Meowing at the door.
Leanne's cat Cosmo is looking, looking longingly through the patio.
We'll let him in for his dinner in a bit.
Yeah. We thought it might give us a little meow, but he's not been back in since. I always welcome a cat visitor onto the podcast. I've had my own cat on it. Well, you can't hear him, but he walked along the back of the sofa and surprised us on Ross's episode. Oh, he's saying something. Okay, well, we'll leave it there.
Better wrap it up if Cosmo wants his dinner.
Yeah, we better wrap it up since the little black cat wants something. Oh, he's doing some long meows through the window. Okay, thank you so much, Mia.
Really
appreciate
it. It's been
really fun. Yay. And yeah, thank you. Bye. Bye. Hi again. Some slightly outdated chat there at the end about a TV programme from summer 2021. thanks so much for sticking with us and listening. And a huge thank you also to Rhianne, of course, for taking the time to chat. It's certainly always a pleasure for me. If you'd like to have a nosy a little bit more at what Rhianne gets up to with the Leeds Library Special Collections, you can follow her on Twitter. She is at Rhianne Isaac. Rhianne is spelled R-H-I-A-N and Isaac is I-S-A-A-C and then the number one. She posts beautiful images of items from the collections also on a dedicated Instagram page, which is at rarebook_Rhianne. As always, I would love to hear from you, whether it's about the episodes or with suggestions for future stories to research. You can find me on Twitter with the handle at noheathenland. Links to everything I could get hold of that we mentioned in this episode are in the show notes of the app you're listening to this on right now. Or you can find links on the No Heathen Land Acast page. I'll post a few photos on the podcast Twitter page, including ones from the History of Magic exhibition that I mentioned to show off my artistic flair, and some images of Dirty Dick Turpin himself, including the E-Fit that we had a good giggle over. Thanks, as always, to Luke for editing assistance, and to you again for listening. Until next time. Goodbye.